Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
You know, for many years, I had this vision in my head of what the Combine was. Because, you know, we only see it on TV, and we only hear murmurs about what the Combine is. And then we actually went to it, and we found out what the Combine actually is. And first of all, way different than I expected. Second of all, best NFL event I've ever been to. Had a blast. EJ was there with me the entire way. Have you recovered yet?
Mostly, but I got home a day before you did, so I've got a head start. And the treadmill hasn't really slowed down, but I've sped up enough so that I'm feeling like I'm neutral. I'm not losing ground anymore. So does that count?
It's been a while since I've stayed up to past 3 a.m. that many days in a row. And nothing yep. has made me feel more 32 in my life than the NFL Combine. It is hard to keep up with these people, okay? And we didn't even go as hard as half of them. And I was like, guys, come on, give me a second. This is ridiculous. I'm housing quesadillas on the street, 2:30, just to reload, going to the last bar of the evening. And they're doing it like 4 days in a row. Yeah, that is an endurance event of all endurance yes. events, but it's fun.
Yeah, it is a marathon, not a sprint. We'll talk a little bit more about our Combine impressions as we go through. It was, again, our first time at the Combine, and probably the most common comment to both of us was, what do you mean this is your first Combine in person? We're like, well, we watched it on TV. We thought that's what it was. We learned very quickly that it was not that. It's very valuable. It is, yes, the coolest NFL event I've ever been to. It's kind of like the circus coming to town. In the best possible way, or multiple circuses coming to town, I think is a better way to look at it. But we've got a lot to go over today. We got Combine impressions. We got some standout players, but we got the trumpets out. We have been teasing our.
That's your trumpet sound?
Hey, I didn't play trumpet. I play drums. It's different. So.
All right, Jay, editors, whoever.
Right, we need an insert.
We need a real trumpet.
We'll catch it in post. We'll get the royal trumpeteers here. But this slate deserves it. We've been teasing this for a while. Our draft pod slate is now set. We met with everybody at the Combine, made sure they were in. Lots of folks are chomping at the bit, getting ready to go. So these folks are going to start showing up on your screens very soon. We have a tremendous lineup of experts. We have a bunch of returners. And as we've been teasing, we have a bunch of new folks. So without further ado, the 2024 Bootleg Draft Pod lineup is returners. I'll start with returners, and then I'll give you the new. Brandon Thorne, Trench Warfare Newsletter, and OL Masterminds will be back on the pod. One of our favorites to talk about all of this offensive line class. Who showed out in Indy? Emory Hunt, Football Game Plan at CBS Sports. Our guy, OG, happy to be back on. We will have him as soon as his draft guide is done, which is 1,000 players. Yes, you read that right. Matt Bowen had a beer or two with Matt Bowen in Indy. That was a lot of fun. He is at ESPN. Of course, he is going to come on and talk about five of his favorite players, including one of the big enigmas of this draft, J.J. McCarthy.
Who he knows very, very well.
That's right. Yeah. He coached against J.J. in high school, and he ran quarterback camps with him in the summer. So Matt knows J.J. McCarthy, so that should be a tremendous episode. Speaking of quarterbacks, J.T. O'Sullivan back on the program again from the QB school, talking about this crop of quarterbacks. Obviously, there's a lot of news and information about these quarterbacks, and there will be because it's a strong quarterback class. Nobody better to break that down than J.T. Jordan Reed. Jordan came up to me the second night. We were having a beer, and he said, I want to be back on the pod. Like, we weren't going to let him on the pod. I was like, dude, you're in. We had you last year. Of course we'll have you back on the pod. Jordan Reed, ESPN National Draft Analyst, one of our absolute favorites, more well-connected than just about anybody we know, also one of the nicest guys in the biz. He will return. And, of course, his colleague, Mina Kimes, from the Mina Kimes podcast and ESPN, will be back on Bootleg this year. She confirmed in Prime 47 that she would indeed appear on the show, so she is going to have a return engagement, and we could not be more excited.
Also, adding a couple more to lineup this year, with a wide receiver class this gifted, we could not go the entire draft season without bringing on Matt Harmon from Reception Perception and Yahoo Sports. He is the wide receiver evaluator, like the one I trust the most out of everybody. Probably the best wide receiver evaluator that I know. So he's going to come on and talk about this receiver class. And then, of course, the godfather of them all, Daniel Jeremiah. At some point, when things slow down for DJ, we're going to get him on sometime this month. Ran into him several times at the Combine, of course. And he confirmed to us that he's coming on to talk about, honestly, anything. Like, he knows everything about everybody. So we'll figure out a topic that, and honestly, we'll probably just let DJ choose the topic of, like, who's some guys that you just want to talk about that you haven't got a chance, and we'll let DJ go nuts. So, hell of a lineup. We have a lot of shows coming, obviously, between now and the draft. But today's show is focusing entirely on the Combine, our experience with the Combine, and what the Combine actually is. And, you know, we kind of mentioned this at the top of the show. I didn't know that the actual real purpose for that event is it's a job fair. How many times did we meet up with somebody who we knew and it's like, you know, what are you doing tonight? And they're like, I'm looking for a job, you know, and it's whether it's coaches, whether it's front office personnel, whether it's media people, like everybody is there to network and to open up new opportunities for themselves, both in the league, around the league, outside the league. Like, that's what that event is. It's a job fair. It's a networking event. And it's also like the Super Bowl for information brokers. Some of the stuff we heard throughout the week would make your head spin. Obviously, we're not reporters, so we're not going to like file a story on any of this stuff, but I'm sure we're going to see it take place pretty soon here during free agency. But man, that was a wild week of networking and job hunting and reconnecting. And it's the NFL social event of the year. It's almost like sleepaway camp for the entire league, and it's pretty damn fun, EJ.
It's crazy. And there are two distinct phases, which I don't think I realized. Again, coming from the draft side and being a guy that, like you, has watched the Combine for years and years, well more than a decade, we think of the Combine as the on-field events, and we know what they're for and what they're not for, but that really was the thing. And yes, we were sort of vaguely aware that people got together before that, but when I reached out to folks this year and said, hey, we're coming, I want to overlap with you, what are the best days? It was overwhelmingly like, Monday to Friday, Monday to Thursday, Tuesday to Thursday. Those are the days I'm going to be there. And I was like, that's weird. The drills don't even start till Thursday. Like, really? And then I realized, like, oh, nobody really goes for the drills. Everybody goes home because they can watch them on TV, which is fantastic. But the off-the-field phase is everybody in the league. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. The agents are there. Coaches, employed and otherwise, just like you said, people who have jobs, people who are looking for jobs. Scouts, media, trainers, company owners that do communications, data, equipment sourcing. I ended up in an elevator with a guy with a, you know, pair of shoulder pads and a helmet. And I was like, oh, in town for the Combine? He's like, yeah, I'm trying to sell these to XYZ. And you're like, okay. It's like a convention for the NFL, but it's just everybody. And you see them all everywhere. You see them in the hallways. You see them when you go to the bathroom. You see them when you go to dinner. You see them when you get a bagel for breakfast. Like, the entire league just kind of takes over the city. And like you said, it's information 24/7. It is dizzying. And there are like 2 days in every day, which you said it was a marathon. I think it's the hardest thing. You get up as soon as you can in the morning. You, like, I would typically schedule my interviews for the morning. It was a little easier to control those in the hotel room, do a phone interview or whatever. And then, like, pack up, get showered, throw all your stuff in your bag, out the door, get down to the media center, head into Radio Row. People are pulling at you. Hey, you know, can you do this? Can you do this later? Hey, I can't do this now. And, you know, then there's the pressers from the GMs and the coaches, and it all kind of spins. And then you kind of have to take a break in like the middle of the day at like 4 o'clock and go back to the hotel room, like empty your bag out of all the stuff you got, you know, chill out, get some water, maybe take another shower, change clothes, and then you head back out to dinner. And then it all starts all over again. You go out to dinner with anywhere between, you know, 2 to 6 people. That's a different crowd. Then people break up, go to different bars. The bar circuit starts. It starts at one bar, it moves to another bar, and then it finishes at another one. And that goes anywhere between 2 and 4 a.m. And then you just rinse, lather, repeat for 4 days. And so you do, like, when you're heading out at 6 o'clock at night, you realize that you're in for like another 8 to 10 hours. And
yeah, it's double shifts there.
Yeah, that's what really caught me on like day two, was like, oh, wait, I have a whole nother work day to go. And then I'm getting up early because I got a phoner at, you know, 9 a.m. Central Time or whatever. So it was a fantastic experience. Got to put what I like to call a lot of handshakes to profile pictures, people I've worked with and never met. And that was fantastic. And again, that overlaps. Our buddy Travis Wingfield, who works for the Dolphins, had said, hey, can you meet me at the table? Again, his GM had pushed something off. He said, I got 20 minutes. I can do it right now. I was like, I'm 10 feet away from your table. I'll do it. I'm head down on my phone. I'm texting away and I hear, EJ. And I look up and it's Robert Mays, and he's like 3 feet from me in a chair. And again, I've idolized Robert's work for a long time. We've worked together a couple of times, but here he is 3 feet away. And I like was so in my phone, I didn't even see it. And that just happens over and over and over again all week.
I realized that as a person with mild face blindness, that the combine is not a great event for me, because I'll walk into the bar and I'll hear like literally I made it 5 steps and I hear, ah, Brett. And then I look over and in my head, I'm like, fuck.
Who is that?
Fuck. And it's somebody that like I've talked to a million times for years, but I'm really bad with faces. And that happened to me over and over again. And I was like, I feel like the biggest asshole in the world. And I promise, like, I'm not trying to big time anybody. It's like, I'm just terrible with faces. This is why I work alone in my apartment, so I don't have to interact with people, because I'm bad at it. But eventually, you know, we got the hang of it, you know, seeing the same people over and over again. We rallied by Friday. But the first couple days were a little rough on me, especially because I flew in with like no food. And the first night was also.
Maybe we'll tell that story to the patrons later. But yes, I did save Brett's life with a quesadilla at like 2:30 in the morning from a street cart, because otherwise there would have been wreckage. It would have been pretty bad.
Okay, the story behind that is I made a grave mistake that when I went to the JW, which is where everybody is, I thought that I could just get dinner and then go to the bar and meet people. What I didn't realize is that there's 2,000 people there that I've all talked to before, and I'm gonna get stopped 10 times before I even get, like, I just didn't even get food. I had only eaten a croissant in the morning in Los Angeles, California at 6 a.m. I get to the JW at like 9 p.m. Central Time. Still hadn't eaten anything. I was like, oh, I'm going to grab like some chicken tenders or whatever. And then, nope, not going to happen. So I didn't get to eat until 2:30, which is, again, when EJ rescued me with, it's either the best or the worst quesadilla I've ever had. I don't know. Like, I was so delirious at that point.
I'm not sure you should fill out the survey on that one, because I'm not sure it would be accurate.
I bought 2 of them. I don't know why I bought 2 of them. Again, the only thing on my stomach at that point was Angel's Envy. So it was a rough night one for me. But that's why we have Excedrin, EJ, so we can rally.
That's true.
Now, that was the first few days. The last few days was all drill work. And I want to give a shout out to the NFL and YouTube that gave us, like, when I say unprecedented access, I mean unprecedented access. They had never done this before, ever. But there's a new program called the Creator Pass Program that's a partnership between the YouTube and NFL. And as part of that program, there was only 4 creators down there. It was me, EJ, Tom Grassi, and Scooter Magruder. And they gave us basically the credential of all credentials, where we could go anywhere and do anything. And so we were out on the field for the drills, like standing at the end of the 40-yard dash, you know, wind whipping through our hair as like Brian Thomas Jr. runs 4.33 right behind us. You know, I'm sitting there with a camera literally 10 feet off the circle drill. You know, I'm sitting there at the cone feeling the vibration of Roma Dunze's foot hit the ground as they're running that post corner. I really have no words for what that experience was like. Like, I never even thought I'd be on the field for the combine, let alone 10 feet away from the players, just shooting whatever cool B-roll I could. And the NFL was like, here's these credentials. Don't get in the way. Go have fun, kids. And we didn't get in the way. You know, we made sure we didn't get in the way. But I never even thought something like this was going to be possible. Nope. But because of this new program, it is. And I, like, that was the experience of a lifetime. I will never, ever forget it. I hope we get to do it again. Because being on the field for the drills, you get such a better sense of how good of athletes these guys are. And I don't know about you, but while we were on the field, a couple times my mind flashed back to those guys that tried to fight Cam Newton. And I'm like, look, that's an elite NFL athlete. These are all good NFL athletes. Some of them are going to be elite NFL athletes. I wouldn't fight any of them. And you chose to fight Cam Newton? Are you stupid? Like, these guys are just not the same species. They're ridiculous. They're crazy. They're stronger than anybody I've ever seen in my life. They're faster than anybody I've ever seen in my life. Like, the talent of these guys, just to get to the combine, it's ridiculous. They are all freaks of nature. And just being up close to it, that close to it, really put it into perspective that they are built different in every single possible way.
Yeah, I too want to thank the NFL. We did not expect this. We heard that we might get some access to be, quote unquote, at field level, but behind barriers, which was still going to be amazing. And, you know, I got handed the vest, and it's a black NFL media vest with a number on it. I know what that means. I've been to plenty of NFL games, and you see the access those people have. And I literally, my brain broke. I just started giggling. I was like, what in the world? This can't be for me. This is ridiculous. And then you get down there, you kind of, like you said, you don't want to get in the way. I got a lot out of being there and seeing what the whole process is, because all of you see it at home. You see Stacey Dales. I was parked, you know, 15, 20 feet away from where Stacey's desk was, along with her producers and all the cameramen. And it's kind of the hub where they, you know, they're plugging in all their cords and they're pulling their tripods, and it's, you know, everybody's got a radio and they're, you know, got to get to this part of the field, got to get this guy, got to, you know, live shots coming. And that goes on for the entire time. And, you know, all the guys from, you know, Lucas Oil Stadium who are out there, you know, delivering the bags and setting them up and driving the golf carts around and refilling the waters. And, you know, the agents are there, the scouts are there, a lot of scouts on the field, and they all know each other. So they, you see the interactions between different, you know, position scouts, teams and whatever. And then, you know, it's GMs and former GMs, and all these people had people, and I didn't have people. So I was just standing there by myself, just kind of, again, trying not to get in the way and not to get kicked out, because I didn't really know, you know, what I could or couldn't do. I just didn't want to get run over by some 300 pounder and become the, you know, main character in the story for all the wrong reasons. And I'm standing there, and this other guy walks out, and he doesn't have people either. So he comes and stands next to me, and I'm like, hey, and he's like, hey, how you doing? I'm like, fine. And it's Greg Cassell. And so I'm talking to Greg.
That's all.
Yeah, I'm like, oh God, here we go. I'm going to talk to Greg Cassell and try not to eat my foot. I'm like, all right. And so Greg Cassell and I just chop it up on draft prospects in this class for like 15 minutes before he goes, man, I got to go. My back's killing me. I'm going to go sit in the stands. Really nice to talk to you. I'll see you later. And I'm like, did that just happen? And I said that for two straight days, because that's all that goes on around you. You really get into it. We, you know, we got our availability to be at the end of the 40 and not get run over. We were right at the end of the long jump when Max Melton hit his 11-4, and you get hyped up. I mean, it sounds weird, but it's kind of like a high school boys basketball game. Somebody hits a buzzer beater, you're in the gym and you don't care which team is which team. You're just like, dude, did you see that? That's an amazing athletic feat that's occurring right in front of you. So you get caught up in it a little bit. We got tons of great shots. Got to see some guys that we'd seen at the Shrine Bowl, you know, go to the combine and really go off. Kind of, you know, it's fun to be first, fun to bring the rest of the world into, oh yeah, he's real good.
Cough, cough, Isaac Guerrero. Let's go.
Well, Guerrero, Mace McCormick. We'll talk about a lot of these guys, but Mason was amazing, and he is now firmly on everybody's radar. When we told you about Mason after the Shrine Bowl, and you're all like, yeah, yeah, small school guy that you like, we're like, no, he's way more than that. Now he is top 100 firmly. Right,
he might be top two rounds, honestly.
I think he's getting pretty close to top 75, but just being able to see that transition. You were there later for the wide receivers. You were, you know, like had a tremendous position for the, you know, quote unquote, the winning run in the 40. It was just a tremendous opportunity, and we would run into Tom or Johnny Barks or Scooter, and we'd all just kind of look at each other like, dude, can you believe this? And none of us could. We're all incredibly thankful. We hope that we got a lot of that stuff out to you and transmitted some of that. NFL seemed reasonably happy with it. They didn't kick us out while we were doing it, so who knows? Maybe we'll get to do it again. But, you know, if I put out a tweet that, like, if I look back at my 10-year-old self and say, you're going to be on the field for combine drills, my 10-year-old self's like, get the hell out of here. Like, no way. So, tremendous dream come true kind of stuff. Really interesting information from kind of all facets of the process. Very long days. The first one went to... was it like 9:15, 9:20 before they were done?
Yeah, it went to 9 most nights.
Yeah, they ran a lot of extra drills. They had less guys in the combine overall this year than is typical, but it seemed like they ran more drills, extra reps within those drills, really to get better looks at each guy that was there. So that was a sort of fascinating sort of subtext, but just so many stories, so many people coming together to bring that event to everybody. It's fascinating. And to be right in the middle of it, yeah, definitely kind of a pinch yourself moment.
Before we get into standout performances, you know, I'm sure everybody watching and listening to this, wherever you happen to be watching and listening to, is really into the NFL draft. And some of you might even be really into fantasy football. Remember, you can draft every rookie that we talk about today. Well, not the offensive lineman, but any skill position player or quarterback that we talk about today. You can draft them right now before they even get drafted into the NFL on Underdog Fantasy, because Rookie Best Ball is live right now. And this is probably the best time of year that you're going to get any value on these guys. You know, this time last year, Puka wasn't being drafted. Sam Laporta wasn't being drafted. Achan was like a 14th round pick or something like that. You know, so this time of year, before the larger fantasy community really gets plugged in on these rookies, this is the best time to get them. So if you want to play best ball, you can do that on Underdog Fantasy right now, especially rookie best ball. If you use our promo code bootleg, they will match your deposit up to $100. So whatever you deposit up to $100, they will double it for you on the platform, and you can use that on anything. You could use it on whether it's best ball, you know, year-long pick'ems, daily pick'ems, anything like that. Obviously, NBA pick'ems are doing numbers right now. And also, there is a new depositor special for NBA pick'ems that we'll put on the screen at somewhere around here for new depositors that use promo code bootleg. So they have funded our show very generously for the next couple years. They're our main sponsor. We love working with Underdog. And if you also like Underdog, or even if you want to try out Underdog, you can find them at the link in the description below or the QR code on the screen. Thank you once again to Underdog for making this show possible. With all that being said, EJ, let's get to some standout performances.
Yeah, we should do it. There were so many over the weekend, and there always are. You're going to see guys that we talked about in our, you know, six biggest combine questions episode, like, hey, this guy could go up or down. The combine is an important event for him because NFL evaluators have questions about his athleticism or, you know, his ability to handle adversity, whatever it is. And you see guys every year that excel and raise their stock and make people go back to their tape and say, did I miss anything? And you see guys that, you know, don't have the greatest combine. And again, it's not going to change the film grade a lot. But again, when you've got players grouped in a tier and they're very tightly packed, you know, you're looking for an edge to raise one guy up or lower one guy down. The combine is often that in terms of their overall athleticism score. And so we're each going to pick three in terms of standouts. And we're going to pick three more that are guys that are going to make us go back to the tape based on what we saw. Maybe we haven't gotten to yet. And really, it's about priority for me, because I try and watch the top 100 or 150 before I go to the combine. And then you know, I'm going to watch the rest when I get home. And I raise those guys up that have those standout performances and just watch them first and say, hey, this is, you know, this is a dude, question mark. So who was your first standout from the weekend?
So I know people are going to consider this playing it safe, but I got to talk about Rome Odunze. And again, the benefit that we had from being on the field is we were so close, we could feel the difference between these prospects. Mm-hmm. Again, I was 5 yards off the cone when they were running those post corners. And I swear to God, I could feel the turf vibrate when Rome hit that cut. Like, he just feels different at field level. The speed is different. The agility is different. Obviously, the size. I had already loved Rome. Like, I knew he was going to be a top six pick. And throughout the week, everybody we had talked to, there's kind of a growing, I don't want to say consensus, but there's a growing feeling that Rome's going to be wide receiver two off the board. Watching him in the drills, seeing how far ahead he was of everybody else that was out there. And there's first rounders out there. You know, there's top 20 picks out there. There's a million great receivers in this class. Rome felt so different just being there on the cone, him running right at you. It felt so different that I think I'm now in, like, yeah, Rome over Neighbors. And not just Rome over Neighbors, but Rome over like 99% of this class. If your name's not Marvin Harrison Jr., like, I'm not sure that there's a better offensive player in this class than Rome Odunze. And I'll tell you what, I think the gap between Marvin and Rome is smaller than the gap between Rome and a lot of other players, or rather the gap between Rome and Neighbors. Like, it was almost a religious experience being close to that man run routes. And even with everybody else on the field, my head just kept going back to him over and over again. I'm like, oh my God, like, that's an all pro receiver. Like, I don't know how else to put it, folks. That's an all pro receiver. That's a number one. If you're a Bears fan listening to this, I'm sorry. He's not getting to 9. He's just not. He might not even get to 5, if we're being honest.
100% agree. And 2 weeks from now, I'll be back up in the field house at UW watching the pro day again. And that was my first experience last year watching that pro day. There was stuff going on the field. There's 75, 80 people in there watching that class. And of course, all the juniors and sophomores come to support their guys and imagine themselves out on that field and whatever. All that activity going on. When Rome walked in, I was standing next to our buddy Alex Katzen, and everybody, you could just hear that whisper, that ripple go over the crowd. Everybody's like, that's Rome. That's Rome. Mm-hmm. Rome's here. You know, and you turn around, he's 6'3". He's got, you know, blonde dreadlock, or, you know, blonde cornrows, and he stands out. He's pretty easy to see, but, like, everybody knew back then that he was that guy. He'd already had a great, you know, second to last season. Then he went out and did what he did this year with Michael Penix. Like, there are very few players in this draft overall, regardless of position, that I feel safer about than Rome Odunze being good at football. Like, Rome Odunze is really good at football, and that's the thing we saw at the combine. He's just good at everything. His hands are great. He ran right down the middle of the gauntlet drill. No weaving. He's fast. He cuts well. He stays over his hips. Like, he's just good at everything. He's just a damn good wide receiver. He's tall, you know, catches the ball well. Like, there's just nothing. You're looking for any little thing, again, to try and separate him. And what separates him is there's no little thing to mark him off on. He's just good at everything. And he's one of the best players in this class, and it was really, really cool to be out there and see him up close against all the other players he's competing against and go, yeah, that guy's the guy.
That guy's the guy. Who was your first standout?
I'm going to go with Braden Fisk, the DT from FSU. And we all knew that he was going to be a great athlete. If you watched him on tape, you see it. You see twitch, you see burst, you see power, you see hand usage. Some people had some questions about measurements. And again, I think people came away from the combine going, we don't care so much about that. Yes, we know he's a little bit shorter armed, whatever else. He's first overall in the athleticism score among DTs at the combine. I don't think it was surprising. I think it was kind of surprising how he did it, like how demonstratively he kind of put his foot down on that. He just really blew folks away. You know, 1.68 10-yard split and a 4.37 shuttle at damn near 300 pounds, very solidly built, 6'3", 6'4". His hand usage is great, super aggressive. He's just a classic plug-and-play three, go rip through the line and get somebody. And, you know, again, there's a bunch of alphas out there. Byron Murphy's out there, and you know, there's a ton of guys on the interior. You know, Johnny Newton wasn't running because of his foot, but like there's still plenty of folks that showed up and ran drills. And when you looked at Fisk, you went, I have no problem. I bet he probably gained 15 or 20 spots. Not because, you know, a combine performance or running around in shorts made people more sure. What it made sort of evaluators and team people sure of is, oh, we can't wait and get that guy. We're not going to steal that guy at 70 or 80. Like, he's going to be off the board at 45 or 50 because he's really good.
Also, the benefit of us being on the field is that we are able to shoot a bunch of 4K slow-mo of him going through drills. So, editors, I'll send you all those cut-ups. We can throw them in, and you guys can get a good view of our perspective of him going through the drills. Because, again, he's another one of those guys where you could feel the difference. Not to go off on a tangent, but the Murphys going back-to-back, you know, with Byron Murphy going first was not kind. I'll put it, like, because again, when you're watching it from 10 feet away and you could see the difference in the bend and the explosiveness, it really is a great tiebreaker, these drills, seeing guys go back to back. And Fisk, even among the other freak DTs in this class, you know, Chris Jenkins, Byron Murphy, you know, Jerzon didn't work out because he's coming back from an injury, but like, you could see the difference between him and everybody else. I understand the length concerns. I think he's got like 31, maybe 31 and a half inch arms. But I'll tell you what, when you're that explosive, you're that bendy, you're that powerful, we'll figure it out. Like, he's going to go high. He's just too good of an athlete not to. My second standout, this is somebody we got to talk to. We'll have an interview coming out with him, you know, later on in the draft process. He's somebody who I want to say it was late into Shrine Week after we saw him practice a couple days. We're like, we got to request him. And that's Dadrian Taylor Demerson, the safety slash nickel out of Texas Tech. Goes by Rabbit. You and I really, really liked him in Shrine Bowl week. He was one of the best players on the field at any position. And he looked like one of the best safeties out there this week. I kind of asking around about him in Indy. There are some people who think he might sneak into the back of the second round as one of the highest drafted safeties. You know, whether it's him, whether it's Newbin, whether it's the Washington State kid whose name's escaping me right now. You know, it's not like the best safety class, but there's still some really good players. And if you need a really rangy free safety with legit low 4.4 speed, great feet, great hips, can drop down and play nickel. I mean, he's covering Malik Washington one-on-one, you know, with two-way goes. And That's a hard skill set to find. And not to put too much expectations on him, but he has a very similar skill set to Tyrann Mathieu, except even better long speed. And if you're getting even 80% of Tyrann Mathieu, that's worth a second round pick. So I think he could go fairly high, and he's had a great Shrine Week. He's had a great combine now. Crushed the pro day, and we're off to the races.
Yeah, before the combine, he was sticking around that, depending on what board you looked at, the sort of 115, 110 mark overall for players. I think he's getting up into the double digits now because he's tall, he's long, he's very fluid. He is truly position versatile, not just like, oh, he can play that, but played a ton of nickel, played a ton of deep, and he would do it from snap to snap, which is really fascinating. Pretty different skill sets, and did both of them very well. And then he goes to the combine, jumps out of the gym. He's a very good athlete, like confirmed all that stuff. And again, I think people were kind of thinking, hey, you know, if we don't get, you know, one of the top three guys, four guys, we can, you know, Rabbit can be our backup plan. Somebody there, when there's five teams thinking that, somebody's going to jump up there and get him in the, you know, in the double digit draft pick range. And he deserves it. He's a great player, great kid. Very valuable skill set in the modern NFL. So again, he's not going to last probably as long as you think he might or thought he might before this week. My second pick, there's a measurement at the NFL Combine that I wait for every year, and I know you do too, and it's our buddy Josh Norris's demarcation line for the shuttle for offensive linemen, because the...
One of my favorite traditions at this point.
That's right. The Mason-Dixon line for the shuttle is 4.47, 4.47 seconds, and guys that basically come in under that threshold have a very high success rate of starting, you know, multiple games in their career and being very, very successful. So it is one of those, it's kind of a cheat code. It's a little bit of a money ball piece of the combine. Like, hey, the guys that have done this, like 85, 87% of them have performed very, very well as NFL players. And there were five this year. Usually there's one or two. There were five guys this year, but one of the most interesting to me is Tanner Bordellini, the center from Wisconsin, because that wasn't the only number that he blew away. He was an excellent athlete, and he's got great size. A lot of times when we see that from a center, it's some guy that weighs 290 and he's, you know, 6'1". No, Tanner's 6'4", 303, ran like the wind. He had a 1.69-10 split, 4.94-40. He is below that magic line, and he's way below that magic line. He is 4.28. in the shuttle, which is a great number. The other thing is true positional versatility. Our buddy Ben Fennell put out a tweet. He has played all five OL positions at Wisconsin. So you get versatility, you get size, you get tremendous athleticism. Like, Bordellini was not a center I got to. He was, you know, in that second tier. He is going straight to the top of the IOL list for the watch list. He is a tremendous athlete, positional versatility, you know, comes from a great school, has a lot of experience. Let's do it.
I have not got to him just because this offensive line is, or, you know, the entire class at all offensive line positions is just so, so deep this year. But I feel like the drumbeat has steadily gotten louder for Tanner Bordellini. So he's, you know, when we get in the next section of like, oh, players that push their way up your watch list, he's not on mine because I didn't want to double up, but like he is on my, like he did go up my watch list because when I saw those numbers, I was like, hold on. What? Like, that's like wide receiver numbers that he's putting up in some of these agility drills. So, you know, another year, another Wisconsin freak interior offensive lineman. Like, of course.
Yeah, go figure. But and it was the stack. It was the stack of numbers, right? The first one was like, wow, okay, Bordellini, nice run. And it was like, oh, Bordellini, nice jump. And it was like, Bordellini, nice shuttle. Holy crap, he's leading like every drill. And by the time he was done, he led almost every drill for the offensive lineman, or was in, you know, the top three at worst. And that's somebody that just body of work, you go, oh, okay.
Speaking of freak offensive linemen, by the way, I'm going back to the UW well for my my third and last standout performance. That's Troy Faatanu. Good God. Like, when's the last time you've seen an offensive lineman have that good of a combine in the drill section? He was flawless. He was immaculate. Like, again, he's another one of these guys out there moving like a freaking running back. Like, he could play tight end. Like, that's how well he moves. And there's a lot of people that were thinking, ah, is he going to slide into guard? Because usually when you see a 6'3 tackle, you assume they have short arms. He doesn't have short arms. They're 34.5 inches. He has above average arm length. Mm-hmm. In addition to having a shorter frame, and what does that mean? It means the center of gravity is lower. It means it's not only is he long, but he's not as easy to get under, like, say, a 6'7 tackle that has the same length. Like, he's not even a squatty body. He's harder to hit for an edge rusher. You know, when they're throwing out the stab move, you know, when they're trying to get under you with a two-arm bowl, like, it's just a smaller target for you to hit. And, oh, by the way, he has just as long of arms as you do at 34.5 inches. And, by the way, he's an explosive athlete that had one of the best mirror drills I've ever seen. Just exceptional quickness, exceptional balance, power, technique, length. He's not 6'6", but I don't care because he's actually at an advantageous size being, quote-unquote, short at 6'3.5". He's got everything. Like, to me, that's a top half of the first round pick to me. And I don't want to hear any of this, like, is he going to play guard? He's not going to play guard. All right, the last time we saw somebody, you know, with a similar profile to this, slightly different, but in terms of, you know, the same questions that were being asked and then went to the combine and crushed it, it was Rashawn Slater, who's an all-pro caliber tackle. Again, slightly different frame, different arm length, but in terms of guys where you're watching the tape and you're like, oh, it's a pro tackle. Oh, but the size thresholds. And then he gets to the combine. He's like, oh, it's a pro tackle. Like, yeah, Troy Faatanu, NFL left tackle, starting day one, and I have zero concerns about him.
Moves incredibly well in space. Former volleyball player. And he just got too big. He just got too big to play volleyball, right? So he started playing football. But all those movement skills from being, you know, 60 pounds lighter are all still there. You saw him in the mirror drill. And again, the guard talk, you know, I understand it, but it is gone now. This is a guy who, quote unquote, won the measurements, right? The arm length came out and everybody went, hey, wait a minute. Like, this isn't borderline. Like, he is well over the threshold. We already knew he moved well in space, which is what tackles really have to do. We were just kind of worried that he would be, you know, excluded because of this measurement that a lot of teams have. And I understand why, but wait, he's well over that. And he moves that well. And then he went out on top of the field on, you know, and moved well in all the drills. Plus, he's got good tape. Yeah, they're, you know, we're out of reasons not to like him anymore.
I think he's firmly in play for New Orleans at 14. And nothing against Trevor Penning, but I don't think that pick has worked out for them so far. And I think Faletonu is just a much better prospect than Penning was. And that team needs a left tackle, folks. So he could be a top 15 pick in this draft. Anything after 15, for me, that's just gravy. Like, you're playing with house money at that point. If he got to the Bengals at 18, sprint it in. Like, truly sprint it in. He's going to be a good one. All right, who's your last and final standout performer?
I'm going to talk about an entire position group because it is...
Cheater.
Rare. That's fine. You can call me whatever you want to. It's my
Cop
show.
Out.
I'll talk about what I want to. Now, the entire wide receiver class, like, we've said since... probably last fall, it's going to be a good wide receiver class, going to be a good tackle class, going to be a good wide receiver class, going to be a good tackle class. We just talked about a bunch of the offensive linemen, including Faletonu. It's a very good tackle class. There's a lot of tackles we didn't talk about. It is still a very good to great tackle class. The wide receiver class blows it away. Like, the amount of guys watching them go through the drills, two very large groups split in half, going right down the middle, watching the speed numbers. There were 26 guys. This kills me. 26 guys ran 1.55 or faster in 10-yard splits. 26 guys. 1.55. That's blazing. We normally see
it's
like
gotta be a record.
Half that. Like, we normally see like 12, maybe 14 guys. And probably three or four of those guys are guys you never hear from again. They just happen to be really good sprinters. 26 guys in this class broke that threshold. Brian Thomas ran a 1.50 10-yard, 4.33 at 6'3", 209 pounds. Oh, yeah, and he's got pretty good tape at LSU. We already talked about Rome looking great in every phase. Guys like Ricky Pearsall made GMs understand they can wait and get a very good player this year. You know, great, sick athlete. Like, Ricky Pearsall's a really good athlete. Plus, oh, yeah, he can catch. He looked tremendously smooth in all the drills. There are going to be so many wide receivers picked in this draft. Like, if there's any kind of tie down the board and people are just like, well, I don't know, we kind of need a linebacker, we kind of need a wide receiver, they're just going to default to wide receiver because of the depth of this class. And it just keeps going and going. This is, we've said it for the last 3 years, oh, this is a great wide receiver class. This is a great wide receiver class. This wide receiver class is like the wave cresting. There are, it's a big class in general. We're still got the COVID eligibility and everything else. Like, there are so many talented receivers in this class that if your team needs a wide receiver and they haven't picked one and you're full, you know, you're fully through the first two rounds, don't panic. There's a bunch more coming. It was crazy to watch. Like, each one of those groups could have been a full draft class for wide receiver. And there was two of them, and they're just chock full of top flight athletes that are going to be performers very quickly in the NFL.
You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about, you know, is this class going to break the record for first round receivers, which was set in 2004 when there were seven receivers in the first round. And, you know, at the time I was like, I think six, yes, seven maybe is pushing it. After the combine, I think we hit seven. I really do. Because it's Marvin, it's Adunze, it's Malik is the top three. I think A.D. Mitchell goes first round. That's four. Brian Thomas Jr. goes first round. That's five. And I think Keon Coleman was impressive enough that he could be the sixth. I think Xavier Worthy is absolutely in play for the Chiefs. Yep. I think Ladd McConkey is in play. You know, Troy Franklin's in play, even though, again, I'm not the biggest Troy Franklin guy, but I know he has a lot of fans. It only takes one team. Even Xavier Legette. Like, mm-hmm. good God, Xavier Legette. Like, I'm all the way back in. Again, he was another one of those guys where, like, I could feel the difference in the explosiveness down on the field. Like, he is just a different kind of athlete. You know, so there's like, nine guys that I would feel comfortable about, like, if you mocked them in the first round, and I think seven of them go.
And there's teams that are high on Roman Wilson. I don't have anywhere near a first round grade on Roman Wilson, but there are teams that like Roman Wilson in the slot, and if they're picking it, you know, 28, 29, 30, he's in play too. We can go on down the list, and like, all the guys that don't necessarily make it in the first round, they're all going to be available in the second. They're all going to get picked there. And then there's guys like, you know, Malik Washington, who we love farther on down the board. Incredibly skilled, could be some of the most productive receivers in his class. They're going to be going in the third or the fourth round. They're going to be going to pick like 120 because there's already been 15 wide receivers picked and there's more. So it's...
We got Holy Cross receivers with like 42 and a half inch verts, guys. Like, what are we doing?
We did a simulated Bears mock off season last night with a bunch of folks, Bill Zimmerman, our buddy Brad Spielberger from PFF, Aaron Lemming from Bear Report and Windy City. And we went through everything. We went free agency, the draft, whatever. It's just like, you can just pick guys. Right. And we ended up picking Brian Thomas after we traded down a couple times in the first round. I think we were at 13 or 14 or something. There's a bunch of moans. Brad was like, guys, he ran a freaking 4.3 at 6.3 or 6.4. Like, he could go earlier than this. Like, there's just so much talent. And when you're down there in the field, it is a little bit head spinning. You're like, another guy well over 6 foot that is just blazing, ran a 4.3 or low 4.4, can move like that, can drop his hips and turn like that. It's an evolution of the game that we're seeing this position just produce a cornucopia of talent. And the league's going to benefit. Like I keep saying over and over again, that my rule is kind of like Ron Wolf when he was the GM of the Packers saying, hey, I'm just going to take a quarterback every year. I think that's flipped. I think GMs are just like, I'm going to take a wide receiver every year because they're super expensive if they get good. You always need young ones. Three wide receiver sets are largely the norm. You got talented wide receiver classes, you just take one. At some point, you just take one.
Corner, too, because, like, I mean...
you got to go the other way. You got to defend it.
Oh, 100%, yes. Like, 100%, yeah. You need as many good corners as they have receivers, which is five at this point, right?
Yeah.
But I was on the Chargers Weekly podcast with the Chargers when I was there on Radio Row, and... You know, I brought this up to them because obviously Terrion Arnold's like heavily linked to them at five if they don't trade down. And a lot of Chargers fans are like, corner, really? And first of all, I'm like, yes, corner, really? Have you seen their corners? But, you know, a point that I made was that similar to receiver, where the top of the market's going to be like 32 and a half for Justin Jefferson this offseason.
Yep.
You know, when we saw that huge jump when Christian Kirk got that big deal and then all of a sudden every receiver was getting like $10 million more than they were the year before, we're about to see the same thing with corner. Like Jalen Johnson is about to annihilate the corner market. Legarius Sneed as well. So corner is now one of those positions along with quarterback and receiver where the value of a rookie contract is going to be utterly absurd relative to what the top of the free agent market is, right? Tight end's a lot closer. Like you can kind of, I don't want to say dumpster diving, but you can get value adds in tight end and free agency. You could do it with guard. You could do it with defensive tackle. Corner? Nope. Good luck. Like even average corners are going to be getting crazy money because of what Jalen Johnson's about to do to the market. So that's why I also think these corners.
And there's two other things, right? Mm. The value of the cap just went up. So yep. Every contract is going to get an additional percentage. I don't care what position. Like they're just going to tack it on. It's like tax at this point. And then Sertan's coming.
And Sauce next year.
Yeah. Like it's not going to slow down anytime soon, folks. Those numbers are going to continue to balloon. We're going to see a continued stretch between what a rookie contract gets you and what folks at the top of the market are setting. And they're going to become more valuable than lottery tickets. You know, wide receivers and corners. Like if you get a good one for cheap that's young, you win. It's not going to be quite the difference that we see in quarterback, but that's literally the greatest difference in the sport. So, yeah, go pick your corners, go pick your wide receivers.
If you had to take a guess, not to go too far on the tangent, if you had to take a guess of what Jalen's going to get.
Well, depends on what he sets for. So the franchise tag is 19 something. They probably settle somewhere in the middle, right around the top of the market, because that's what he deserves. 21 and a half.
Like I said, folks, corners expensive. Yeah. Draft them cheap. Draft a lot of them, because it's not like there's less receivers now.
If they paid him last year, it would have been cheaper, but that's always the way it is with contracts. If you wait a year and a player has a good year, and Jalen had a very good year, they're going to capitalize on that, and you're going to have to pay for it. That's the risk a team runs. Bears, you know, played with fire, and now they got to pay the piper if they want to keep the player. They can franchise tag him this year. They already have. We'll see how that plays out. Doesn't mean they won't sign him to a long term. But right now he's playing at 19-something. But, yeah, for a longer-term deal, my guess would be somewhere between 21 and 22.
We'll get back to the show and talk more Combine in just a second. But I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsors that helped make this episode possible. In the first place, LinkedIn. Obviously, the job market is really competitive right now, and hiring season doesn't exactly end anymore. It used to just be early in the year, and now it just kind of goes forever. I just hired my first employee ever recently, Nathan, a new community manager that's helping me not just with the community, but basically everything. So this kind of applies to me too, but if you're also a small business owner like me and EJ, and you have a job that you need to fill right now to help meet your 2024 goals, LinkedIn Jobs can help you do that. There are more than a billion professionals on the LinkedIn network, and 86% of the 2.5 million small businesses that use LinkedIn report getting a qualified candidate to apply to their job postings within 24 hours. So if you yourself are hiring, this is the place to be. You can post your available job for free right now at linkedin.com/bootleg. Again, totally for free. You can post your job at linkedin.com/bootleg. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. But thank you once again to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's show. They have been a loyal sponsor of ours for a while now, and of course, support a lot of small businesses just like ours. So thank you again to LinkedIn. And with that, let's get back to the show. Back here with the post-combine recap, we just talked a little bit about the corner market and how, you know, rookie corner deals are about to be at a premium because of how expensive corner already is and is about to be even more expensive. And so when we kind of get into this section about players that push their way up our watch list, guys that we haven't watched yet, but we definitely kind of moved up the list that we wanted to get to post-combine just because of how excited we were with their field work. I'm going to hit that corner spot because, again, a lot of these guys are going to go early because teams need them really bad. It's not as good of a corner class as the receivers, but somebody's got to cover these dudes. So when I look at the corner class, the one that really jumped out to me that I have to watch as soon as humanly possible is Kamari Lassiter from Georgia. Mm-hmm. He was fantastic. He's not the biggest guy. He's 5'11", 186, but I feel like every corner these days is kind of light in the pants. That's just the new archetype. It's all about agility and speed, and he is incredibly agile, very fluid, very fast. And in the field work, especially when I was watching the W drill, like he put his foot in the ground, and it was just instant change of direction. So I had not gotten to him yet. And I feel like there's a lot of the corners that come out of Georgia, typically I'm not like huge fans of them. Mm-hmm. Tyson Campbell was kind of the exception of like, oh yeah, I really like Tyson Campbell. I had him as a first round pick. He went to the NFL. He's been pretty good for Jacksonville. Kamari Lassiter, I think, is the next Georgia corner that I actually like, at least just based on the field work, because his movement skills were way different than a lot of Georgia corners that I'm used to, where it's like, I can go really fast in a straight line, but please don't ask me to turn ever. Kamari Lassiter can turn. He could change directions. Super fluid. He's kind of built like a nickel. So the main thing I want to look for when I watch him is, can he tackle like a nickel supposed to be able to tackle? If the answer is yes, cool. Slide him inside day one. We're good to go. Because just movement skills-wise, at least in the field drills, he made me turn my head quite a few times.
One of my favorite things about these lists is we don't talk about them, pre-show, and Lassiter was the last guy that I axed off my list. Like, he was on, he was basically four on my list of three. And it was because of his foot quickness. His foot quickness in the grapevine drill. He had a bunch of really good agility numbers. And again, when you combine that with how they actually move as opposed to just testing, I was watching a little Javon Bullard tape when I got back from the combine. He pops a couple times on there. It's just sort of everything rolling together to push him up again to the top of the watch list and say, hey, he's got to be in that next batch of corners that I watch. I'm going to stay in the corner market. Max Melton, defensive back from Rutgers. We were at the end of the long jump pit for Max Melton's 11-4, like I said, his broad jump. And A, he's built just like his brother, Bo. He is very solidly built up top. He is a good-looking athlete. And his 11-4, he just pushed out there. Like, some guys really float. Some guys are absolute, they're kind of stompers. They're just trying to get everything they can. He just pushed. Like, there's no other way to put it. You could just see how strong that movement was. And when you saw where he landed, you know, it's a good foot past where a bunch of other corners were landing. And you're like, oh. And then, oh, let's look up his vert. Oh, he went over 40 inches in the vertical, too. Oh, he ran a 4.33. Oh, okay, this guy is a tremendous athlete, just like his brother. Now I want to go back to the tape, see how that matches up. I'd heard a lot of great things about him in terms of his versatility, in terms of his hitting and his tenacity. Everybody said, keep an eye on Melton. And now that, you know, okay, he's in that second tier. You can't watch everybody before the combine. At least I can't. We can't covering the league, but he's right at the top. He's going to be right up there like Lassiter is for you. And quite frankly, Lassiter is for me because, again, I just barely, he barely didn't make my list, but both really worthy inclusions. Who was your next one that pushed their way up the watch list?
There's a lot of nuance to this, so please, please forgive me. I have already done a lot of work on J.J. McCarthy. We've talked a lot about J.J. McCarthy, and I have expressed multiple times about J.J. McCarthy. He is going to be probably the last scouting report that I finish because of how much work it's going to take to really nail down what he is. Just because of the nature of the offense he was in, he didn't get to throw it that much, and he especially didn't get the opportunity to make a lot of high-level, translatable throws to the NFL. It's just going to take a while to figure it out. So forgive me for that. But that being said, he got pushed back up my watch list. I am now more motivated than ever to finish that report because when I was standing right behind him during the field work, watching him spin that ball and also just seeing how he was built, like he just looks like an NFL quarterback. People, you know, they saw the weight compared to the listed weight. I think he was listed like 203. That's an old number, and that was not fake weight. Like, he's pushing 220 now, and it's real. This is not Bryce Young chugging a bunch of water before weigh-ins, okay? Mm-mm. That is real weight. He is strong. You know, my favorite EJ-ism that I've picked up from him over the years, got an ass that you could set a drink on. Like, that dude never misses squat day. Like, what's the other word that people use? Trunky? Like, I'm
trunky.
That dude, that dude fucking lifts, okay? That yeah, weight is real. It's not fake. He's got NFL size. He's 6'3", pushing 220. Like, that's real. And the arm strength is real. It just jumped off his hand different than a lot of the guys that were there. You know, there's actually a bunch of quarterbacks that I thought spun it pretty well. Devin Leary, you know, had a really nice day. Penix obviously had a really nice day. Michael Pratt also had a really nice day throwing it, but McCarthy just looked different. It looked like an NFL arm. You know, a lot of the intermediate and short stuff was just dead on. You know, I felt like some of the receivers, you know, they were misses, but when I was watching it up close, it didn't look like it was on him. You know, there was receivers that were getting to the wrong landmark. You know, they were flattening more than they were supposed to, or they were taking it deeper than they were supposed to. And these guys he's never thrown to these guys before. Mm-hmm. So he's used to certain landmarks, and they were hitting different ones. The timing was different. But if we're just looking at placement, he was putting the ball where you're supposed to put it. And, you know, all the coaches that were around me were like, great ball, JJ, like, that's where you're supposed to put it. And then, you know, privately they'd be like, hey, like, this guy runs 4.3, you got to throw it differently in the next one. He runs 4.5. Like, because again, he's not familiar with these receivers, but like the coaches were walking up to him after every rep and they were just like, you put it in the right spot, but when you're throwing it to this guy, just be aware of where he's going to be. So again, it's more of a timing thing than a, is he accurate or is he on time? He was accurate and he was on time. And I was just so impressed with how he threw the ball. And by the way, he never threw any of these receivers under the bus, even though like clearly some of them were not running to the right spot and they were getting dogged on by the coaches for not running to the right spot. He'd always walk up to them and be like, that was on me. Sorry, I'll give you a better ball. If you want another rep, I got you. Like, even with guys he's never talked to before, like he was out there like being a leader. And I even chatted with him a little bit after the field work. In 30 seconds, he called me sir 10 times. I'm like, first of all, that makes me feel old. Second of all, you're adorable. Third of all, thank you. Like, just super respectful kid. Everybody loved talking to him. Nailed all the interviews. I came away from that whole day thinking, was I too low on J.J. McCarthy? Or rather, was I not excited enough about J.J. McCarthy? Because here's a big kid with good arm talent, excellent leader, really smart, team-first attitude. What am I missing? You know, what am I missing? So I'm gonna go back and do a lot more work on him and really, really figure this out. Because at least watching him in person, I understand why everybody thinks he's going top 12. I really do. And I'm no longer giving that the side eye. If anything, now I'm thinking, who's trading up with the Chargers at 5 to take him? Like, I'm more wondering that than I am, is he going top 12?
I came away from Indy with a very strong sense that what I think about J.J. McCarthy doesn't matter. It is completely irrelevant what I think of it. The sort of overwhelming reality, like you said, that I had some side eye for, was like, I'm not so sure I'm in that camp. I'm going to have my own thoughts about J.J. McCarthy, but what I came away from Indy with was a very strong sense that what I think doesn't matter and what the NFL thinks and is most likely going to happen, and I was less sure of this before I got there, and I was way more sure of it after I left, he's going top 15. Like, yeah. He is going to be selected top 15. Doesn't matter what you or I think about that. It is likely going to happen for many of the reasons you stated. I thought his field work was up and down. There were routes he hit perfectly, and it was routes. There were certain routes that he drilled, like lights out, perfect balls, left and right. There were other routes, didn't look so good. It's the same mix of receivers. Again, he's throwing to guys he's not familiar with in terms of speed, and yes, there is a chemistry piece to this for all the receivers, but you know, even with all the other quarterbacks, there were routes he kind of airmailed. He hit a couple. The arm strength is there for sure, the power. It's not that I don't think he wasn't seeing it, but, you know, there were definitely routes he didn't hit very well, and then there were routes that he absolutely drilled, and there were multiples of both. So it kind of felt like the rest of McCarthy's evaluation, like, hey, there's some great stuff here, and then there's some other stuff. He's a very good athlete. He's obviously very well thought of in the league, mm-hmm. and that's what matters most, is what the teams think of him. He's doing all the right things. He has absolutely added good weight. He looks rocked up at that damn near 220. Strong arm, strong attitude. Teams love him. They know that he played for the Harbaugh family. Lots of the league has a very high opinion of Harbaugh's coaching, you know, both Harbaugh's coaching and even their dad. And that is the thing. So JJ is going to go early. It's almost like other concerns with prospect fatigue and everything else started hearing about Jaden Daniels' weight in relation to JJ McCarthy's weight, and he's going to weigh at his pro day because he's trying to add weight. Is that light frame going to be a thing with decision? Like, all this stuff, is the noise is beginning, but the noise around JJ McCarthy is that he is going early, and I believe that at this point, regardless of where I end up with McCarthy in my rankings, he is going to be selected early because some team out there or teams are going to believe that he can lead their team as a starter very quickly in the NFL.
The real question that we should all be asking is not how high he's going to go. It's within those top 12 to 15 teams, where can he go that will be successful? Like, that's what we should be asking. Not is he.
I agree.
More so, where should he go? To me, the obvious answer is Minnesota. Like, great receivers, great coaching staff.
I think Minnesota, got the tackles. I think Atlanta. Like, I think there's a couple of places where he could go with a very good surrounding cast offensively, use a lot of the skills, a lot of the accuracy that shows up on his tape, even in those limited throws. He he has some window throws for sure. He had some at the combine. So again, I think that's a very proper pivot at this point. Not is he going early, but where's he going to go and where would be the best place for him to go?
Yeah. And ultimately, that's what we want. We want him to go to a good spot where he for can sure. be successful, even as Bears fans, if that means Minnesota. Which, because it's like, hey, we got Caleb, we're fine. You know, like, well, fine. Every game between Minnesota and the Bears will be 35-33. But, you know,
just hope we'll come see out how that out. Works out. My second guy that pushes his way up the watch list, these are some of my favorites. These are guys way down the board who I have not seen. Like, I just have not seen either. I have not watched folks on their team. They weren't way up my list or even on my list at that point. And that's Cedric Johnson, the edge from Ole Miss. And every time I turned around in a drill, the way he moved, I was like, okay. And I, folks that have listened to my work for a while know that there's always a few guys. And it's not at one position. It's not specific. There's always a couple of guys that I just look at and go, man, he moves really well. Why have I not heard his name? Cedric Johnson is that guy this year. He's a down the board edge who ran and moved really well. He ran a 1.6, 1.10, a 4.6, 3.40. 10-foot-2 broad jump. He is 260 pounds. This is not some 240, 235-pound edge rusher. It's a big dude that can really move. And look, the SEC is chock full of them. You talk to any recruiting director in the SEC, and there's a lot of guys like this, big four or five-star athletes that can really move, fly up and down the field. Doesn't always translate to play on the field. So that's what I have to go back and see. But in terms of movement skills and size, Sed Johnson's got it. Like, that guy is a very, very good athlete. So let's see what he does when you put the pads on. So he's moving up my watch list.
I was going to put him, and then I saw you did. Again, we didn't talk about these beforehand. I was like, ah, shit, he got Cedric. But that was another one that caught my eye, you know, especially in the circle drills and the bag drills. We're like, oh, hello.
Oh, who's that? Is this guy? Look
and,
at that.
You know, pull out the sheet, look at the number, and we're like, okay, okay. Duly noted, Cedric Johnson. We'll get to him later. But he moved great. My number three, this is somebody who, from the start of the process, I knew I was going to have to get to eventually. And I still hadn't before the combine. That's on me. I understand he's going to be one of the first safeties drafted. Still had not got to him. Tyler Newbin from Minnesota. Hello. Great feet. Great hips. You know, he's it's so funny these days. Like, we say he's got great size for a safety at 6'1", 200 pounds. But, like, for safeties these days, that is actually great size compared to the 90s where it's, like, 225 is what the safeties were. But for the position, he's a bigger safety. But just the fluidity that he has at that size with that length, not to mention great ball skills, you know, very experienced. There's a lot to like about Tyler Newbin, and he is already on my list, but he moved even further up my watch list of, like, I got to watch him this week because he was extraordinarily impressive in field work.
I watched him when I got home. Safeties were, I was just kind of going in order on my sheet. Safeties were last. I didn't get to them. I got about halfway through my corners before the combine, and then the combine carnival started. I didn't get to watch any tape while I was in Indianapolis. But as soon as I got home, which again was a day faster than you, I plugged in safety. Safeties was the next, you know, position group I needed to chug through. Newbin was the first one I watched. And my favorite thing about him, having done my write-up on him, is he makes a lot of his own luck. And that is a great quality to have as a safety. And by that, I mean his pre-snap alignment is where it should be. His eyes are in the right place. He obviously studies tape. He is floating the correct direction. And when that tip happens, he just, quote unquote, happens to be there. He happens to be there because he did everything right up to that point. And so when he gets a big hit or he undercuts a route or whatever else, he has great physical skills. He's not the best athlete, but he's a very good athlete. You pair that with a really good set of eyes and a really smart football brain, and a guy's going to be just in the neighborhood over and over again, and that's Newbin. Whether it's fumble recoveries, big hits, PBUs, interceptions, like, you just see it on tape, and it's a pattern. It's not lucky. He is absolutely making his own luck by doing the right things and, you know, up that lead up to those moments, and it happens over and over again. It's a habit with him, and I love that about him as a safety.
He's one of those guys who's going to go, like, somewhere on day two. I'm not ready to commit to round two, but I think he's going to go day two. Yeah. And he's just going to play forever, right? Because he's smart. and he has great instincts, and he catches the ball really well for a DB, which, good God, how many times did we see drops in the field position? Like, again, folks, if they could catch, they'd play receiver. He caught everything. So, like, he's just one of those guys who's going to play for a long time, and there's value to that.
Yeah, Matt Millen does a ton of Big Ten games, right, as an announcer, and Matt Millen was watching a bunch of the, you know, the clips when I started out watching clips before I watched all 22. Matt Millen, by the end of the season, was saying, guess who? Tyler Newman. Like, there he is again. You know, are we surprised? It, you know, he'd seen enough Minnesota tape at that point to be like, yeah, that guy's going to make plays. Of course he is. It's Tyler Newman. My last guy is actually a pair of guys in terms of tight ends. And I have a thing for athletic, underused tight ends. And a lot of times it's system. You know, the classic case for this is George Kittle, but there's a lot of others where, you know, guy goes and tests really well. Then you go back, and in the few opportunities, it's kind of the J.J. McCarthyism of, like, tight ends, right? They just didn't throw him that many routes.
J.J. McCarthyism.
There you go.
There's a joke in there somewhere. I'm not going to say it, but
I won't charge you extra for that. Devin Culp from UW, who played right up the road. And again, in limited chances in that offense, in Ryan Grubb's offense, he was explosive when he caught the ball. He's a little bit on the smaller side. You know, he's 231. He ran a 155. We were talking about 155 as the receiver number. The guy's 231 pounds. He ran a 155, 10 yard, a 4.47 40. You know, he's 6'3", about 230. A little bit undersized, but that's okay. He runs like a wide receiver. He really is going to be in that move route. But I like the limited opportunities. I want to go back and just, like the McCarthy film, pick it apart and say, hey, is there more there? Is it just, you know, he did a lot with whatever chances he got. He just didn't get a lot of chances. The other one's Theo Johnson. Look, a Penn State guy blowing up the combine. Stop me if you've heard this. Theo Johnson, though, different specimen. 259 pounds, 155, 10-yard split. Same 10-yard split, 30 pounds heavier, and 4.57, so only a tenth off on the 40. Can really move. Had a great line at his podium session, said, look, Penn State tight ends just aren't sexy. Somebody was like, why don't more people pay attention? He's like, Penn State tight ends aren't sexy. I was like, well, there's your soundbite for the day. Thank you, Theo Johnson. So take a look at those guys and really see if, hey, down the board, because there's a big gap in the tight ends. We've talked a lot about a bunch of other positions, corner and tackle and wide receiver. We haven't talked a lot about tight ends in this draft because there's Brock Bowers way up top, who's just kind of like unicorn playmaker. And then JT Sanders, who we really like as a really good all-around athletic tight end, great size, we think is great. And then there's this big drop because JT's going to go somewhere in the 40s. And then the next tight end's probably like Cade Stover from Ohio State, and he's going to go in like the hundreds. Like, there's a 60 position drop. There's a big shelf in the tight end market. So if you're sort of value shopping and you need to go get wide receivers and edges and corners and sort of more expensive in terms of draft position picks, but you still need a TE2 or a TE3, like, you're going to be going through these guys. Jared Wiley from TCU is another guy that had not great necessarily athleticism, but he was really good all around. He wasn't bad in any of the numbers, and he looked really good in the field drills. It's kind of like, okay, I got to look at that guy too. Like, you're going to be culling through all these guys. Dallin Hoker, who we saw from Colorado State, who we really like, and Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. Like, all these guys, you're going to be kind of like mixing and stirring, going, hey, where can I get them? I need one. Which one do I like, and which one really fits sort of my team and my system?
It's funny you said that Penn State tight ends aren't sexy when Penn State just puts tight ends into the league like almost every freaking year at this point. Yep. Because, you know, Theo Johnson's come out. Last year was Brenton Strange, who went in the second round. You got Pat Freiermuth 2 years before that. You got Mike Gesicki a few years before that. Jesse James a few years before. Like, there's Penn State tight ends all over the damn league.
Okay? It wasn't me. This is Theo, and I think he was just talking about flash. Like, hey, we're there for substance, and we're going to test really well. We can all block, and, you know, well, maybe not Gesicki, but the rest of us can all block, and we're great athletes. And, you know, they don't get featured in that offense. We talked, even last year, we talked about all the Penn State wide receivers, and we were like, yeah, Brent Strange, really, same thing. Really good athlete, really good size, can move people. Hey, didn't have that many receptions. Is he Is he good as a receiver? So just kind of a current turn in the Penn State program. We know they're going to be great athletes. We know they're probably going to have really good size. They're going to be aliens that way. But, you know, can they figure in a modern NFL passing game? And, you know, jury's out. But the way to figure that out is go back to the tape and see what we see.
All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for today's show. If you got here or if you've been here the entire time, we thank you for watching to the end. However you happen to be consuming this show, whether it's on YouTube or Spotify or any podcast platform of your choice, we really do appreciate you guys. And if you want to indirectly support the show, obviously you can check out Bootleg Merch over on Homage, our clothing partner. But they don't just have bootleg merch. They have stuff for your favorite team, whether it's college or pro. They have pop culture stuff, whether, like, let's say you're a millennial who loves Legends of the Hidden Temple. They're the only company I know that has Legends of the Hidden Temple merch. So just kind of check out Homage, browse around, see what you like, because anything you buy from our link in the description, we directly get a cut of, and that directly helps the show. Of course, we also have a Patreon if you really want to directly support the show, where we are due shortly to do our next patron-only stream, Q&A stream, and then we're going to be having our draft rankings, our position rankings coming out closer to the actual draft day, which we're going to be doing from that corner back there at my place. EJ's coming down to LA for 3 days of draft goodness. So again, check those links out in the description. Thank you all for watching and listening wherever you happen to be doing that. And we will see you next week with something entirely different.